Hello, and welcome to the Auditory Chronicles podcast, a monthly program bringing you short tales of mystery and wonder for your listening pleasure. I'm your host, John McKenzie. In this episode, we bring you another adaptation of a short story from 1922. It is a tale that begins with an old songwriter pondering the sum of his life.
His for a Song by Leslie Ramone. When Andrew Lorimer came back from town, he stood for a moment in the doorway of the room where, for more years than he cared to count, he had lived with his dreams and memories of the past. The walk up the hill from the village station had tired him. He was breathing a trifle heavily, but it was not a purely physical weariness that caused Andrew to lean against the doorframe. His was a fatigue of the spirit. All his life, Andrew had been trying to reconcile things as they were with what he thought they ought to be. He had fought the nearly always losing battle of the idealist, given his youth and mature years to the production of verse and tuneful song. He had dared to be a poet-composer, and pledged himself and his beloved to suspense and poverty. Now, Andrew Lorimer's dreamy eyes were dim. His hair was white. His beloved had gone onward. He was alone. As he moved away from the door, Andrew's mouth quivered. He looked aimlessly about the dusty, untidy room. Here in work, he had found solace from lonesomeness. He glanced over the table littered with sheets of paper. There he had spun words to charm and give hope to others. He had found distraction, some measure of comfort, in shaping vital thoughts to simple phrase. Over by the window was the old-fashioned grand piano where he had sat late o' nights, seeking the melody to carry the joyous lilt or poignant sadness of his songs. Now there was no further incentive to labor. Andrew Lorimer had arrived. Each month, when he went up to town, his publishers handed him a check of overwhelming value. But although he went to the bank and turned those checks into legal tender, not a cent of those royalties had he spent or brought back with him to his country home. A lonely man usually lives frugally, and the habit of making ends meet on the proceeds of some of his earlier songs clung to Andrew. Besides this, and greater than material considerations, was his deep, personal feeling toward the song which had brought him such great monetary reward and so much secret fame. He went over to the piano. On the rack was a sheet of music. Those touching words and wooing, haunting melody were his. The title of the song was Girl of Mine. Andrew, the lonely singer, might pass away and be forgotten, but his song would never die. Yes, he had put his heart into that song, and there was a subtle balm in knowing that it was being played and sung all over the world. For the rest, all the ease, the luxuries the fast-accumulating royalties would buy, Andrew had no desire. For him, the call was to another plane. His hands fell gently on the keys, and while he softly played, he gazed out over the darkening hills. In inarticulate, unuttered phrase, he was hoping that his work here was done, that he would soon, soon be free to go beyond, to where he knew his beloved was waiting for him. Then, such is the oddness of a man's mind, the practical, the material pierced his spiritual absorption. There was all that money. What should he do with it? How dispose of it? He had no relatives, no near and dear friends. He had outlived them all. Yet, something must, should be done. With a sudden movement of decision, Andrew got up. He lighted his lamp, and there was a smile on his tired face as he took the sheet of Girl of Mine from the piano and sat down at his table. The smile grew to a suggestion of boyish mischief as he wrote a few lines across the inner page of the song, and when he had signed his name, he chuckled with satisfaction. When the ink had dried, he folded the song and leaned back thoughtfully. What should he do with it? Where place it for safekeeping? It was a small matter for consideration, but it bothered the old man. He could come to no decision. Then his thoughts drifted erratically from one subject to another. He thought of making himself a cup of tea presently, of getting something to eat presently. And presently, a languor stole over Andrew, and all urge to thought or movement receded from him.
I see old Lorimer come in on the 7:20.
Wonder what he goes up to town for. Regular, every month since last December he's been going up. This remark, proffered by the proprietor of the village store and lounging club for gossips of the male order, was prompted by idle curiosity. No one in the village could be expected to take much interest in an old man who wasted his time playing the piano and wasn't neighborly enough to take his place among men and spit and chew and talk politics and nonsense in the ring around the store stove on a winter evening, or on the steps of the post office in the summer. All the same, the storekeeper's observation brought immediate response.
I don't give a dang what that old crank's doing in town or out of it. He ain't nothing to me. But there's one thing I ain't gonna stand for, and that's his cow coming over into my place. Instead of gallivanting around like he does, old Lorimer better stay home and mind his business. And I'm the one to tell him so, too. I'm going up there tonight. I'll make him mend that fence and pay damages, see if I don't.
In emphasis of this statement, Fred Truscomb wrinkled his sandy eyebrows into a knot, showed a broken yellow fang as he stuffed a wad of tobacco into his cavernous mouth and shambled to the door. The offspring of jealousy is spite. Here, then, was the reason for Fred Truscomb's outburst over the mere mention of Andrew Lorimer's name. In some obscure way, he sensed the superiority of the white-haired old man over himself. He despised Lorimer for his gentle ways. He hated him because the children ran to him whenever they saw him on the street. He sneered whenever he heard others speak with pitying respect of the old man who played the piano. Also, there was another reason for Truscomb's story about the cow. The pockets of his shabby, creased clothes were empty of the thing he craved, but disliked to work for. He had no money. Therefore, this was an excellent opportunity to go up to Lorimer's house, start a wordy complaint, and make himself a pest and nuisance until he got damages. Grumbling and muttering to himself, Truscomb left the village. It was a night to lure even the callous-hearted to a gentler mood, but not so with Truscomb. It is doubtful if he ever deigned to give a passing glance at the star-patterned sky. There are blind people with more vision than some who have eyes to see with. Arrived at Lorimer's house, Truscomb went in without knocking. By way of announcing his entry and asserting his status as a brother and equal, he clumped heavily as he went along the hall to the room where the light was.
"I've come to collect for the damage your cow done," he began.
And when Lorimer did not look up from his chair, he repeated his plaint in louder, angrier tone.
"Sleepin',"
muttered Truscomb in disgust when he found he was not favored with the slightest sign. It riled him that the old man should not instantly awake to the call of his harsh voice. He thumped across the room. It was his intention to shake Lorimer rudely, but he did not. When the spirit leaves the body of those who have lived the good life, the inanimate clay takes on an aloof majesty that even a vandal may hesitate to intrude upon. Besides, Fred Truscomb was badly scared when he caught sight of the unmistakable pallor of the old man's downbent face. He retreated back against the piano. He stood there mechanically moistening his lips and wondering what he should do. Should he rush off? Spread the news and enjoy the center of attraction? Would there not be food and drink and tobacco and a welcome in a dozen places for the one who could tell the story of the passing of Andrew Lorimer? Undoubtedly there would be, but while he was grasping at these possibilities of profit, Truscomb's eyes shifted about the room. He felt a vague sense of peevish resentment that he could see nothing of value that he could acquire. His contemptuous glance took in the heavy furniture, the few pictures, the bronze clock and ornaments on the mantelpiece over the open fireplace. But to the ignorant eye, only the tawdry and glittering has any appeal.
"Junk,"
he muttered, and framed the thought.
"Wonder if he's got any money hid away."
Truscomb lowered the lamp, then started his search. He rummaged in drawers, looked in closets, went into the old man's bedroom and felt under the mattress, and he found nothing but disappointment.
"Nothing but an old pauper,"
he thought, and, returning to the front room, he crept nearer to the old man. He saw, lying under the lax hand, the folded song. He read the title. Then, bending closer, he slipped his dirty, ghoulish hand into a pocket. He found a stub of a pencil and some scraps of paper covered with writing. Next, some letters. These he replaced. Then he found a worn leather wallet. He could feel there were coins in it. A quick glance showed him that there were also some bills. After that, Triscom flitted. He went home by a circuitous route. In the shuttered secrecy of his sordid room, he counted the prize of his petty, mean thievery. He had robbed Andrew Lorimer of $12.98. Until late the next day, Fred Truscomb did not venture out. It was nearly 10 when he went to the store. It surprised him to find that it was more crowded than usual. There were at least a dozen people there. They were grouped in front of the counter. They all stopped talking and turned when Truscomb entered.
"Say," exclaimed the storekeeper, "weren't you going up to Lorimer's place last night?"
Truscomb shook his head.
"Didn't go near it."
The storekeeper was mildly surprised.
"But you said you was going. Didn't you say you was going to get payment out of him for the damage his cow done?"
Truscomb shrugged.
"Changed my mind. There ain't no law against that, is there?"
"No."
The storekeeper shook his head.
"But I reckon you'll want to kick yourself all the rest of your days that you didn't go as you said you was going to."
Fred Truscomb's eyes shifted furtively from face to face. It puzzled him to see that they were all regarding him with amusement rather than suspicion.
"What is it you're getting at?"
he demanded.
"Old Lorimer's dead,"
the storekeeper announced. Truscomb simulated as best he could a look of surprise.
"Too bad,"
he mumbled.
"But I don't see what I got to be so upset about. I won't get paid for that fence and all that, but..."
"You know that old Lorimer wrote songs."
"I've heard he did,"
said Truscomb cautiously.
"Ever hear of Girl of Mine? He wrote it."
Truscomb's jaw sagged. His yellow fang protruded.
"He wrote that?"
"He wrote the words and the music. It's been selling like hotcakes all over. He died worth more than $5 million, and there's more to come."
Truscomb leaned against the counter. He caught the storekeeper winking at the silent group.
"What's the game?"
Truscomb snapped.
"What are y'all gawping at?"
"Well, it's like this," explained the storekeeper. "If you'd have gone up as you said you was going to last night, you would have been worth a pile of money. Doctor said the old man had been dead 12 or 14 hours when they found him this morning. So I guess he was gone by the time you said you was going to be there."
"But how would I have got anything?"
demanded Truscomb.
"Because you would have been the first one to discover his body. He must have felt he was getting near the end. He wrote his will just before he died, left every cent to the one who found him. Only condition is that he's to be buried next to his wife, that's all. If you'd have gone up there, you'd have come into all his money. As it is, it's the parson's little Clara who'll get it. She went up with some new laid eggs this morning. She found the old man sitting in his chair. His will was right there on his knee."
"On his knee?"
repeated Truscomb in a dry whisper.
"Yes, they've been phoning all day, but there ain't no one to claim his money. Clara will get it, all right."
Truscomb scratched his head.
"But you say the will was on his knee."
"That's what I'm telling you. I've seen it. It's written on the sheet music of the song he made such a big hit with."
Fred Truscomb swayed slightly. He stared vacantly. Then his face distorted with venom as he saw the smiles. What would the fools think of him if they knew he had been within a few inches of that strange will? What wouldn't their laughter be if they knew that he had pledged his chance of a fortune for $12.98. He croaked an oath, swung round, and lurched out of the store. Across the street, a party was in progress. A sweetly singing voice trembled a high note on the radio, then swung into a haunting refrain. The song was "Girl of Mine." The sword of mockery turned in the gaping wound of Truscomb's thwarted greed as he stumbled off into the darkness.
We hope you've enjoyed our presentation of His for a Song, as read by JT. Be sure to join us next month for another tale of mystery and wonder. For Auditory Chronicles, I'm John McKenzie. Thanks for listening.